tune named Silver Bell, have you? You know it. About the first, I think I'd ever heard that, and that's 1938 or 1939. Then that didn't come into good playing until after 40, about 45. I'd say they started picking that up and playing it about 45. But during the time I was down around in Kentucky, in Huntington, in Kentucky, I heard a lot of tunes there. You know,
you lived down there for a while?
I lived 7 years in Huntington, and I worked painting automobiles 34 years.
Huh.
And
I worked down there, that's what you did?
I worked there in Akron, Ohio, painted automobiles everywhere is at nearly. For Chevrolet, Pontiac, garages, and first, whatever you get a job at.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a long time of painting automobiles, 34
right.
years. That's why I'm not working today. I'm painting too long.
Yeah.
But
you lived in Akron then for quite a while?
I lived there, and let's see. I lived on 3 Arch Street for a while there in Akron. And I lived over on North Hill of Akron. I know well, you know where that's at, but that's just east of Brown Street there in Akron. A little, maybe a 2 mile east of Brown Street.
Yeah.
And Market Street. Market and Brown Street comes together, Market and Main.
Yeah.
But we lived back up on called North Hill. I worked for Five Corner Service Station there in a garage, I mean a body shop. Painted automobile.
Did you play much music when you were up there?
We played a good bit. My brothers got, we all get together, you know, my brothers, about every weekend we'd play music.
Yeah, they lived up in Ohio too?
Yeah, all of them lived around Akron, Stowe,
yeah.
Medina, and through there, and we played music.
Right.
Got a lot of good musician friends up there I get together with once in a while when we get up there on vacation.
You lived up there for what, 15, 20 years?
No, I lived in Akron about 5 years, but I lived in Huntington 7 years.
Yeah. Right in below there, all that Amish country in there, it's a real pretty.
I don't know where that's at.
Yeah,
yeah, I'd like to back, I'd like to get back around there.
Yeah.
My brother, he's a fiddler, he plays most of the time. He's
what's his name?
Denver McQueen. He plays down at the Armory, he plays the Armory a lot, you know, on the weekends.
Down in Webster Springs?
No, in Akron.
Oh, he lives in Akron.
He lives in Akron, he plays.
Now, is he the one that found the guitar or the banjo frame?
No, that's my brother-in-law. He lived down here on Holly River.
Oh, all right.
But he lived in Morgantown then, and he just get out, shop around, you know, and digging in trash balls, I call it. That'd be the best way to put it.
Right.
And he found that banjo, tenor banjo. Somebody threw it away. There's no use to throw stuff away. It's good. I mean, there's too much good stuff thrown away already. That's why people's poor.
Right.
A lot of people make yourself poor by throwing the best stuff they got away.
Exactly.
I mean, if you throw an instrument away to me, you're throwing the wrong thing away because I value them pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you see, it's a solid metal body. That will stand for the wood body will decay in the time. It's a silver-coated body. That's what you got to watch. You can't throw something silver-coated away because it'll be here when the rest of everything's gone.
Right. What's that one made out of?
Silver. That's a stainless steel, silver coated.
When was that built, do you think?
That's built in the 20s.
Yeah.
they don't build nothing any good later, did they, after 40? They didn't. They put too much weak stuff in them.
Yeah.
Into. Now, I'll try to play you the tune Set Your Fields on Fire. I think you've heard that tune, I imagine.
Yeah.
Your disc chords and that, you got to use them over and back. You know, you use your, I'd say that's a D7, you use it for your disc chord, and then G7, you come back into it. That disc chord, you, because these, a lot of these songs, you don't play them straight chords, you got to use a disc chord to drop over into to get barrier sound. I mean, it wouldn't carry right if you just drop it back to your minor disc chord, which wouldn't work right. You learn that after you play a while.
Yeah.
And like the graduation tone auto harp, I don't know music, but you see them graduated off in a certain amount of numbers.
Yeah.
And them's all chords, your notes. You've got chords to chord by here, and then you've got notes to pick by. A lot of people, that's where they get confused. You see, they think all you gotta do is just hold down something. Strum it. You don't do that, see? And every note, every chord, you got notes.
Yeah.
You use them, you blend them, you know, when you're picking a song, you course probably pick it out. You can't just strum it. It wouldn't sound right. Strum, just straight strumming. You've got to note your keyboard with your right hand just as well as you pick your bar. You just pick your bar up, then you hunt your notes through it if you're playing a tune. Just like if you're going to play the about any of your jig tunes, you've got to hunt the notes on them the most of them. Like a Mockingbird, that was an old tune they played years ago, and they hunted their notes on. You'd have to hunt your notes all on that. Thank you. keyboard. I had a time of reaching over to get my first key. Right. They about blocked me off there, see.
Yeah.
But a lot of them played by just chords and dragging their fingers over. At the bottom.
Yeah. Yeah, I've seen that.
Here, see, I need my keyboard moved down with greedy. I'd like to have one. That's 36 strings. I'd like about to have 60 strings.
Yeah.
I'd have enough strings to go on there.
Yeah.
There's your G chord.
Do they make them like that?
No, I figure this is as big as you can get. Unless you get one of the ones that pulls up your shoulder and pick it.
Yeah.
That's called a harp of some sort. I don't know the name of that.
Yeah.
I can play one of them some, too. I played one of them in France while I was in the Army. Well, I get into an old castle over there. You see, they put us in there, in the barracks, all the barracks we had when we first went in. Well, that's in England, the first one I played. They put us in there for a barracks. These castles, they'll hold probably 50 or 75 men. And they built bunks on the walls, these old castles where they'd abandoned. And all of them had a harp or a piano or something in them. That's a lot more interesting than what the Army was. We'd get in there and play them things. And some would sing, some would play. What could play would play, and the rest would be a singing. And that's how we passed a rainy day, and it rained a lot in England. We had a lot of days to sit in the house. We couldn't get out, so we spent a lot of days in there singing and playing. And you know, the boys would play games. There wasn't much to do over there when it come a rain, and it rained. It rained 3 and 4 days out of the week sometimes,
yeah.
Just about kept you in all the time.
Right.
I've never seen a rainier place in my life.
Yeah.
Then we got to France, we didn't have too much time till the war was over, and then when the war was over, we had a good bit of time, but by that time I had a knee crippled up, shrapnel in it, and I was in the hospital the biggest part of the time from there. I come back into there at Luxembourg. I come from there down to Paris and stayed 3 weeks in Paris. Then they shipped me over to England. I stayed 3 months more in England. Then they shipped me here to New York, and then took me from New York down to Convalescent Hospital in Stanton, Virginia. And I was down there, I was operated on there, and they worked on my knee and fixed it up, and then they sent me there, worked my Convalescent Hospital in Atterbury, Indiana. There's where I recovered from my knee injury. Played music with boys all through them hospitals. I mean, that's a good place to get with a lot of fellas really like to play.
Mm-hmm.
And they was interested too, because some of them was pretty critically crippled up, and they enjoyed anything of going. If I didn't have instruments, we sent home and got our instruments and brought them in. As long as here in the United States, that was all right, but overseas, you couldn't. Well, we bought music over there and played it, too.
Yeah.
In France, I bought a banjo. Had to give it up when I went on, you know, on near the front line. I had to lose my instruments there. Just left them where we was at, in the old tents.
Yeah.
Where we was staying. They wouldn't allow you to take nothing like that with you. You just couldn't. People couldn't have carried all your load and your artillery and everything you had with you and your luggage and baggage. You had to load without taking anything else.
Yeah. What division were you in? The infantry or the artillery?
Attached to the 8th Air Force, heavy maintenance ordnance.
Uh-huh.
What we done is replace car truck motors and tank motors. You know, a tank now and then would tear the motor up. We'd replace them. Heavy maintenance, you get into a lot of heavy work. Rear ends and transmissions of heavy trucks, that's what we done the most of. Never saw anything like a small vehicle, like a Jeep or nothing to work on. It's all heavy work. Then lots of times we'd deliver, haul, take two wreckers. We had two wreckers. We'd deliver these tanks up to the front line, pick up cripples and bring them back to a junk lot, salvage yard. And that's where I got hurt. I mean, that's a dangerous job in fighting. I'd say you didn't have nothing to fight with, and you're just in this wrecker.
Right.
And they put you up there to the front line, you'd either pick these crippled up tanks and drag them clear back down around Cherbourg and put them in a salvage yard. And that's more dangerous than what being in war. You could dodge if you're out, but if you're in a wrecker, you can't dodge. You're right up in the open where everybody can see a 10-ton wrecker. You're right up there where everybody can see you.
Boy, that's
remarkable. Yeah. You'd get on that, maybe you'd detail for that for maybe 2 weeks, and then you'd change over to something else.
Yeah.
You'd be in a truck division where you have to overhaul and change. anything that you could do minor in overhaul work, you'd do it. But if you couldn't do it quick, you had another motor. You jerk one out, set another in.
Yeah.
Same with the rear end of a truck or vehicle. You just take part new parts and put on, kick the old on the side. You didn't go ahead and do much maintenance work on it. You didn't have time.
Right.
And I done about all the body work in our company. It was going. I done a little fender patching, you know, when they'd bang them so bad they couldn't get along without repairing.
Yeah.
So you might see a headlight in there where you'd have to straighten it back where they can see. And I didn't, you didn't have as much, no technical work. You didn't have nothing. I had to look too good. You just straightened it out the best you could and let it go at that.
Right.
That was interesting, though.
Yeah.
I spent 39 months in there. You got crippled, I'd probably have been in there a lot longer than that.
Yeah.
They just had to, you know, get rid of you when they get you crippled. That's about it. That's all of it.
Yeah.
That's the end of your day.
Now, do you play, how many years have you come down to Augusta? You were down there last year for the festival,
year I've been down.
Yeah. Do you go to other contests and stuff now? Like,
we have, no, not too many. We have a lot of places we go to each other's home. Now, I've got a cousin, first cousin in Gassaway. We get down there every 2 weeks, or used to, for the last 8 or 10 years. And then they'd come up here on the next 2 weeks. And we just get together and play with each other. Then I go to some of their music, like on the 4th of July, homecomings and stuff like that, and play for them. And over here at Holly River State Park, they have a homecoming we've got one coming up next month. I'll play over there. All the homecomings, you know, for the churches and the first one, and like family get-togethers.
Right.
This one next month is a family get-together, and we'll be playing over there. That's, I think, the first week in September, I'm pretty sure. We'll be over there first week in September playing there. And they'll be probably 3, maybe 4 of us. When my daughter's in here from Morgantown, she plays with me. The last homecoming ahead over at Hackers Valley, she played with me.
Uh-huh.
She plays the guitar and I play daughter harp. We had pretty good music over there then. We didn't take no violins because it's more or less religious people and we took our playings for her. You got to fit the occasion of what you're working with, so we took all of our religious playing instruments with us. And you got to play for them whatever the needs of the got. And that's what they're enjoying of.
Right.
Well, now, you've heard the auto harp. Is that the way you usually hear them played?
I guess, yeah.
I never did ask anybody how you tune one.
Right.
I was just tuning.
Right.
I'll tell you about tuning.
Fine.
I went to Charleston and took a load of scrap iron down to Charleston. I had a big truck. That's what I want to match my hand with. And shut the door on, close the door, and latch it. And then I got my knee again to handle of the door and held it and put it in low gear. Then I turned the switch on real quick and it started and I jerked just enough in that latch hold and got my hand back out of that door. Now man, I was fouled. When you get your hand in a door and the door locked on it, it even bent the top of my door the top of the door bent out, my hand sticking in there. And if I hadn't turned my switch on, when I turned it on, the thing started and jumped about a foot and then it quit. If it had just turned on and stopped and quit and then landed back again before it got my hand jerked out, it probably cut her off.
Yeah.
Because it latched the door. See, I held the latch. It was one of them old Ford trucks. You shove the latch forward and hold it with my knee. And then I tucked my right foot and shoved the clutch down, got in low gear, and then just turned the switch on. Just let it jump.
Yeah.
And it just jumped out there a little piece and died, and here I was already out and jumped out the upper door and took off. And the blood was coming out there that high, and I just grabbed my hand on her and come here to the house. My wife gave me a couple aspirins, and I took them. She held the water while I drank it, and I just fell over like a fly because, you see, when them aspirins hit me in the air, hit that hand, I was really, really gone. And I went to Charleston and bought that auto harp. And I started tuning on that thing at 9 o'clock at night. And at 4 o'clock the next morning, I could play Home Sweet Home on it. I tuned all night through till 4 o'clock in the morning before I got that thing till I could play Home Sweet Home. That's a long siege of tuning on went all night. But I just stayed with it for the next day to get it in tune. I'd have still been playing on it, tuning on it to get it to play. Seeing never nobody ever, I'd ever just heard them. I never did see nobody. You can pick one of them. I had to learn the hard way. Just tune all night on, then play, do what I could do the next day. That was a week after, essentially, when I went and got this shot of harp. I know they had to do something where I couldn't play my fiddle, for I only had one good finger and partially used that one. Yeah. And I could stick them again in them buttons and play. Huh. And I started to play, and I think, and then when my hand healed up here and the bones needed to back together, then I took the cast off that thing, and it's a stiff thing. I still could only use two fingers, but now I've got it. So you noticed me a while ago slid off a note or two with that little finger and the one next to it. Why, them things still, they seem to get stiff on me once in a while when I go to try to move them one note to another. But they work pretty good.
Yeah.
I don't know whether it's Pennsylvania poker. I don't know whether beer barrel poker. I might play that for you. Pennsylvania poker. I don't know the music to them even. I just have to go with what I've heard. Mm-hmm. And what if you hear one and know the music to it, you never forget how they operate, because it's all rotation music. I mean, it's keeping your head, and it'll always be there, what you hear. Mm-hmm. I heard that tune on a boat, on the Queen Mary boat coming back from England. So that's where I learned it.
Yeah.
When you play a tune, you play one tune, and I hear it. I might not think of it in a week, but I'll bet you in a year or two I'll be thinking of it.
Yeah.
See, that'll...
You came back on the Queen Mary?
That's right.
Let's see, that was 1945, right?
45.
What month?
October.
Write that down now.
1st October in 45. They don't even use that boat anymore, do they?
I know. Well, I'm pretty sure my father came back on the Queen Mary. He's driving down here today, and I'll ask him.
Well, they had a piano in there, and they had a fellow good player too. And that's where I picked a lot of tunes up on that Queen Mary boat, watching that guy play that thing.
Yeah.
You know, it was only 5 days coming from England.
Yeah.
And I was 14 days and nights of going over there.
Right.
And I thought we was going clear away from everything. And coming back, I know I shortened the distance. I didn't dream of anything coming back here in 5 days after taking 14 to get over there.
Right, right.
But what they had to do, they had to go around these minefields to get out of here.
Right, exactly.
See, we had our place fortified in minefields. Then England did too, and when we got there, they had to guide us in, lead you in there.
Yeah.
And I went over in 42, into 42, the biggest fleet that ever sailed Atlantic. And I was on the Omaha Beach D-Day. Mm-hmm. And anybody's ever been there don't ever want to get back there, I'll tell you that.
Right. Well, my father was involved with D-Day. I don't think he was on the beach.
And I went in the Italy invasion, the first thing, down there in the south part of Italy.
Yeah.
And they just wiped the most of them out there, killed them all out, and they shipped them back to England. What was left, there wasn't too many left.
Yeah.
That's where one of my first cousins got killed.
Yeah.
And I thought the war's over then when they shipped us back to England. I mean, you used to just thinking, well, they're going to send you back home right away.
Right.
And then by July, here they come, the Omaha Beach invasion, we hit that. That was a pretty sad story, I mean, to tell and even to think about. I wouldn't want to ever get in another one. I mean, you just don't know till you see what you see.
Right, yeah.
And you forget about half of what you see, too.
I tell
you, it's done so quick. It's multiplied so fast you can't keep up.
Yeah.
You wouldn't believe how that looked. There wasn't a tree standing nowhere on the Omaha Beach that you could ever see of. They was bombed and shot off. They run stubble so high, just on fire, burning. When we went up through there, I don't know how we got through, tell you the truth, I had no idea, but I see a lot of men laying, I don't know, you know, couldn't say they were dead or alive.
Right.
You wouldn't have time to look for them, you moving.
Yeah.
And some of our crew, you'd have to jump off there in the water anyhow, and then when they opened them barges, see, we was on them heavy maintenance barges. And what could drive, or what did drive, they just didn't have as many vehicles as what they had men. If one's had vehicles, some of them didn't even make it up that beach hill. It's worse than one of these here. You wouldn't believe how steep that thing was.
Yeah.
But they graded out a road enough to get these tanks and trucks up over there. And then 205 houses, see, we had about five 205 houses in our outfit. And it's hard to get them things up a hill.
Yeah.
Now, they're heavy. And they'd attach them on behind the truck and doze the road ahead of them and then get to the top of the hill and then winch your truck up with it and load too. And them men are crawling, walking, or any way to get up there. And actually, you see fellas laying on the ground, but you didn't know whether, like I said, you didn't pay attention whether they're dead or alive. You didn't have time to look.
Yeah,
you had to move on.
Yeah.
I wasn't worrying too much about what I saw, just where I was going to be next, and whether I'd be next or where I'd get to.
Yeah.
And we just got on top of the hill in Omaha Beach and got all of our trucks lined up on the road, tanks and jeeps and stuff. And then them Germans sent them planes over with nobody in them, you know, screaming meanie, they call
right.
it. And they just are falling and bombing everywhere. And I remember we crawled under a truck. That was a bad place to get. The captain come along, he said, boys, get in the ditch. We got to hit the ditch instead of them trucks.
Yeah, the trucks.
Hit them trucks. Yeah, that'd have got us. Well, you don't think quick,
right.
I mean, if you think quick. Then we went into Cherbourg. That's the first time I ever saw in a rail yard. Them big rails, you know, railroad tracks. They was just curled back just the same as you'd peel back a banana peel. I mean, they was standing 10, 12 feet in there before they bombed. Just laid them back like that, but all of them.
Wow.
You come into a rail yard where there's 8 and 10 tracks coming through. And all of them are sticking straight up. You know, there'd been some bad work right there.
Yeah, I'll say.
Yeah, I got to see that. That's the first time I ever saw a rail bent by the bomb hitting it.
Yeah.
And where a bomb hits, it'll dig a hole. Looks like a swimming hole. It'll be anywhere from 100 to 150 feet across it, and you don't know how deep it is.
Yeah.
And that'll be full of water. I mean, that's all over France.
Yeah.
And I watch them bury them there, too, in France. You know, they haul them in on a GI truck, just in a mattress cover. Just put the guy's body in a mattress cover and then just lay it on. And they'll have that stacked full, just you saw pulpwood hauled.
Yeah.
That's the way they haul them in there and then doze out a trench and lay them down, put their little cross on it. And the four down that line, you can see there's crosses. And if you look at it from another angle, it'll all be in the straight rows. Any way you look, straight rows of crosses. And I've just wondered, after I come back, did they bring any of them, or all of them, or how many they ever got them back here?
Right.
I'd say about half or better of them will be over there yet, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
That big graveyard there.
That's right, yeah.
That's out from the Omaha Beach there. It's between Omaha Beach and Paris.
Yeah.
And I saw that. I mean, that made me know there's a lot of people killed in the war. A lot of times you go through a part of the war and you never see that many. They get them and take them away.
Right.
When you go through a graveyard where they're there, you know they're there. And watch them bury them.
Yeah.
I mean, it's good to know.
Can you play a couple tunes for me on the fiddle?
Yeah. Try her. Thank you. Tommy Jackson tune. Tommy played that tune. I heard it on the record. I got it on the record here somewhere.
You hold the fiddle way down in your chest. Yeah. Unique to you?
Yeah, a lot of people wrote them on their chin. That's the way I started playing. I told you I built me a fiddle one time out of a tobacco can.
Right.
I stuck it in my chest to play. That's the way, just however you get your habit. Right in the, touching right again my collarbone and in the center of my chest bone. Most people, now my brother, he put you some out here and get your chin on. That kind of strains my arm too much to get back into a position like
that. Yeah, I see. You rest your arm on your...
Yeah, my fiddle's my arm.
You can play all night, right?
Yeah, I can stay right there all night. Don't bother me. Only thing is, once in a while, you'll have a crease in your arm where your fiddle lays. You have to get out and rub it a little bit to get the feeling back. Some guy heard that and he said, "That's the old time way of playing, love somebody." I said, "Well, that's what I knew. I had it in my mind, but I never could bring it out, just the name of what it is. But I remember now him saying that's love somebody." And then that White Horse tune, that's one, that's just a recently known tune from back in about the, I'd say in the 20s. White Horse, you don't hear nobody much playing it. And I asked Carly Carpenter over here, he's a good fiddler, one of my old buddies, fiddlers, old fella. He's about 67, between 67 and 70 years old. And he said he used to know that thing, but he forgot it back when he was a kid. I said, "Well, I just used to play it back here in the 30s. I said, I just remembered a few words and started into it, it'd come right back to me. And it plays in a G mostly, for White Horse does. Thank you. 30 to 40. That was a popular tune in that day. There's several tunes to know, but when you get a fiddle and try to think of one, you see, you ought to have them wrote down. You see, if you had them all wrote down, you think quick, but you right. Lots of odd ones have come to you, like Ragtime Man and some of them old tunes, Mississippi Sawyer. I'll try Ragtime Man for you. Some of them old tunes, Fruit Jar Drinkers. We heard a lot of them off of the old radio. We had a Belknap radio, had a dial placed about, no, I'd say big as a quarter. Look through and you find your selection station.
That was in the 30s?
That was in 30, about 36. And the thing was about 4 foot tall, and the hole to look through to get your dial selection wasn't any bigger than a quarter. You know, you had a fine, great big cabinet with just a small little hole in there. Sometime in the evening time, you'd have to get a flashlight and hold. We didn't have no electric. Hold a flashlight on that thing to see what station you were. And we got WCKY, Cincinnati, a few times, and down in Nashville, Tennessee. That was our main. Now, that's where I heard Mother Maybell Carter playing auto harp. Now, I learned what I hear, I learned it. I hear I can remember it from now on. Now she's dead and gone, passed away. And I still know most of her tunes that she played. I can still just get through about each and every one of them by a note. And a lot of the songs don't even know a word of the song. Just know the name of it.
Yeah.
But I can take them and go through them by note and know, you know, you don't forget after you hear it all like many years.
Right.
And I don't think her girls can even play, you know, very much. I've heard them girls of Mother Maybell Carter play, and like June and them, they don't do much playing. I heard them down in Nashville last Christmas, and they didn't sound like the old Mother Maybell did. And she could really play it.
Right. Well, instrumental playing is just not important in, you know, that much in country music.
That's right.
Right.
That's right. I mean,
they do so much singing.
And they're on a guitar. I pick Mother Maybell's tunes on the guitar just about the same way they pick them.
Yeah.
Like an old A.P. Carter when he was living. I remember when he was living.
He was Mother Maybell's father?
Mother Maybell's father, old A.P. And then I don't know whether the old lady of A.P. Carter ever played any or not. I never heard her play. I don't know whether she may have been passed on before they started singing and playing much. But I did hear these children playing, and some of the A.P. Carter had a sister. She played some with them back there in like 34, 35, and 6 and 7.
Mm-hmm.
And most of them, they had done, they just kept passing away one at a time until they diminished. I mean, in my time now, they're all diminished, but the younger children, the older people's all gone. Like A.P.'s sister, he had two sisters played, old A.P. Carter, Mother Maybell, that's probably one of his sisters too, I'm not sure about that. But anyhow, that was a group of their own back then, and then Mother Maybell got married. Well, her husband, he come in there and played with them. Then Mother Maybell had all these younger children, younger girls, and they was good singers when he's young, but now they've let that get away from them. Got into more flashier, I call it faster music now than what they had in the 30s and up to 45. Now up to 45 it done good in old time music. But since then they've lost a lot of that. You see they lost their touch the way I figured. Take a fella like me, I've been listening to them off and on now for probably 55 years and I know they've lost their touch to my way of looking.
Yeah.
And, they sing one tune I want to play on the fiddle if I can remember it. Now I'll have to maybe study a minute on it.
Alright.
And I picked it up off a boy down in Tennessee over the television. And Lord, flip your instrument off for a minute.
Oh, crap.
Picked up off a boy down in Tennessee, just listen at him. Tried to tape them off and I only got one.
When did you pick it up from him?
It's been probably 4 years ago. And this boy played some part in Mississippi. And I wasn't getting it very clear through, and I tried to catch it on tape, and I got this part of the Fly Away Birdie.
So he was playing on the radio?
Yeah, on the television.
Oh.
And I picked him off of the television, you see, and I'm watching him too. And my tape messed up, something wrong with it, and I just got about, maybe a verse in the chorus of this Fly Away Birdie.
Yeah.
And I heard him name it. And then the next two or three good tunes they played, I didn't get any of that because my tape was messed up.
Yeah.
And I just had to get what I get. I'll try that Fly Away Birdie for you.